liability for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. Now, here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week, we'll bring you highlights from the Families USA Health Action 2013 conference with former Clinton White House spokesman Bob Weiner, Newsweek and The Daily Beast contributor Eleanor Clift, and Families USA Executive Director Ron Pollack. But first, we've been joined by Common Cause President and CEO and former Congressman from Pennsylvania, Bob Edgar. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
It's great to be with you.
Sitting here again this year at the Health Action Conference by Families USA, take me through the sights and sounds so far this week.
Well, the Families USA is to be commended. They were front and center during the health care debate. And once health care passed, even though it wasn't perfect, even though it wasn't strong enough or good enough for some people, it was under attack, and Families USA was a great defender of this important initiative. I think historians are going to look back and say Social Security was the linchpin of the 1930s, Medicare was the linchpin of the 1960s, healthcare reform was the linchpin of this generation. And while there are some improvements to healthcare that need to be made, millions and millions of poor people and persons who have been outside the healthcare system will now in 2013 have a chance to enter the system, get reasonably cost healthcare. And Common Cause is pleased that even with all of the brokenness in the United States House and Senate, the confusion here in Washington, the partisanship, this particular important next step in reforming benefits for average ordinary citizens passed and will, in fact, make a difference for generations to come.
I imagine that you have a very unique perspective on this particular issue. What was it like when you were serving in Congress? What was the conversation like nationwide, and in particular where you were serving your constituents in Pennsylvania, the conversation about this type of issue?
Well, just remember, I was one of the Watergate babies, elected in 1974, started service in 75, spent 12 years, six terms in Congress. The difference between my service in Congress and today is that special interest and money was important back then, but it came second. What was most important were the talking points. If I was influenced by anybody, it was by the fact that my friends expected purity of my votes, whether it was environmentalists or senior citizens or teachers or average ordinary citizens who supported my candidacy. What's different today is that the freshman members of the House and Senate get visited almost on day one by the special interest groups who bring their checkbooks first, not their talking points. And back in those days, Democrats and Republicans worked together. My best friends were people like Jake Javits from New York, Senator Brooks from Massachusetts, Hines and Schweiker from Pennsylvania. In fact, Dick Schweiker swore me in each of my six terms in a mock swearing-in ceremony. We had almost identical voting records during my 12 years. That's so different today because of the partisanship. And back then, there were controls on money in politics. Now money is corroding the system. Bill Moyers, who's on public television now, says this is the most dangerous moment in American history for democracy. We're either a nation of and by and for the people or of and by and for large corporations and the wealthy. And I believe that average ordinary citizens need to wake up and recognize that together with a whole host of organizations, we need to work to get quality health care, work on lowering the defense budget so that we have a strong practical defense, and using some of that savings to rebuild our nation. What makes us strong is the quality of life in America, not necessarily just having a defense budget that's exquisitely prepared for World War II.
It seems like every few months we're faced with another deadline, another looming crisis. What are your thoughts on the threat of sequestration and the impact that that would have on the United States?
Well, I think the partisanship, the hyper-partisanship that we now have here in Washington is causing great distress. We ought to pass the debt limits almost automatically because those dollars have already been authorized and appropriated. We have to meet our bills. We ought to pay them. As we push up to getting control of the debt and deficit, I would like to hear more House and Senate members who have been whining about the debt and deficit also be honest that they voted for two wars without any interest in how to pay for them. In fact, they gave the largest tax cut in the history of the United States at the very time they were authorizing wars. Whether you're for or against the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, whenever we go to war, we need to recognize you got to pay for it. Now people are wringing their hands and saying, woe is us, we have this huge debt and deficit. And what we're doing is we're balancing it on the back of children, on the back of the elderly, on the back of poor people. I would argue we need balance. Yes, we need tax reform. Let's get to it. Yes, we need reductions of wasteful spending. Let's get to it. And let's not leave out the defense budget in that reform. Let's get a strong practical defense system without overkill. But equally important, let's recognize that the economy also needs to be stimulated. We need to rebuild our bridges and our roads and our highways. When Franklin Delano Roosevelt was faced with the trauma of the stock market crash and the Great Depression, he was smart enough to invest in people. And we've got to invest in those people today. And if we could solve the problem of the hyper-partisanship, if we could fix the brokenness of the United States Senate on the question of the filibuster, and if we could get some of the Tea Party House members to wake up and serve the public interest and not their narrow special interest, we'd be better off as a nation.
I want to highlight something that you just said, and that's the attempts to reform the way the Senate operates through the filibuster. This is something that you and I have spoken about many times here on the program and Common Cause's efforts to try and get some change in the Senate. They did recently take up this issue. What came of it, and what's your thought on the end result?
The reforms that took place last week in the United States Senate were a baby step in the right direction, a very small, premature baby step. What we really need to do is get back to democracy being based on majority rule, not on supermajority rule. Our board and staff and consultants went back and read the Federalist Papers, discovered that the founding fathers and mothers were smart enough to put seven instances in the Constitution for a supermajority vote. But we discovered they were scared to death that democracy would be ruled by supermajority votes. No democracy except the United States has something like the filibuster. And in the last 4 or 5 years, a small percentage of senators, representing only 14% of the population of the United States, have blocked full disclosure of public financing, blocked the DREAM Act that would have given immigrants a pathway to citizenship, young immigrants that were brought here by their parents. They got 55 votes in the United States Senate. The House, in a bipartisan way, had passed it. The president was ready to sign the bill. Medicare, which even conservatives like, only passed by 55 votes in 1965. It would fail today. We've got to get back to having the Senate operate on majority rule on all issues except those seven specific instances that are in the Constitution. And your listeners might be surprised to learn that the filibuster was invented by Aaron Burr 20 years after the Constitution. It's not in the Constitution. And up until 1970, it was used more often to protect slavery and lynching laws than to protect human rights, civil rights, people's rights, children's rights. the Senate last week should have been more courageous and more dynamic. And we want to keep putting the pressure on the United States Senate to fix their rules.
Why don't you think they were more courageous?
I think they're vaccinated by Harry Byrd's rule. And Harry Byrd, who passed recently, he was a good senator, but he institutionalized Senate rules. And they are very reluctant to change their rules because of tradition. And to that I say, it's time to get the rules of the Senate and the rules of the House based on majority rule with respect to the minority. Give them voice. I think Harry Reid has been wrong on his blocking amendments. I think when I served in Congress, we let the opposition, many times the Democratic opposition when I was a Democrat, offer any amendment they wanted to offer that went through the Rules Committee of the House or was put on the Senate. But we had these things called conference committees. Let the House and Senate, by majority rule, pass a bill on health care, on unemployment compensation, on fixing global warming, and then let's go to a conference committee where the House and Senate work out and compromise. What I'm afraid of is that many of the conservative Republicans and some of the blue dog Democrats think that compromise is a dirty word. We need to recognize that if we're going to face the future, we've got to have a system of government that can answer the questions that we face and not a system of government that's simply based on old-time tradition and old-time rules that are not in the Constitution that have been invented by people who want to obstruct majority rule.
Bob Edgar, the president and CEO of Common Cause, as well as a former congressman from Pennsylvania. It's always a pleasure to have you on this program. We appreciate your honesty and your enthusiasm.
Thank you
so much.
Keep up the good work.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue from the Families USA Health Action 2013 conference with former Clinton White House spokesman Bob Wiener.
Attention AFGE members. Are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit that allows you to buy brand name electronics, furniture, and more through easy payroll allotment. With no upfront cash or credit check required and 12 months to pay, Purchasing Power gives you a better way to buy. AFGE members receive an 8% discount over what other federal employees pay. Learn more at afge.org/purchasingpower.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We are joined now by Bob Wiener. Bob is a former Clinton White House spokesman. Bob, great to have you on the show.
Jason, it's great to be with you. Of all the radio shows here, and there's some 30 of them here, I picked yours to be the first one that I do because we have so much fun together, and you really bring out the best in the people you talk to.
Bob, let's get down to business. Headlines recently showing that GDP shrank at the end of 2012. What's your reaction to that?
Well, Jason, I addressed the London School of Economics just a couple of weeks ago, after the election, actually, and they agreed, all the faculty and all the students, that austerity and tax cuts are for the rich are not the way to go to fix the world or the United States economic debt problem. And we are paying the price. The Library of Congress came out with a study that said the tax breaks stop productivity in the United States. We have had the Bush tax cuts in place now for basically a decade, and we have had a decade of stagnancy as a result. I am disappointed that President Obama only restored the Clinton tax breaks, which created 23 million jobs, for the top 1%. For 99% of the people, he let this drain on the budget continue instead of what would spark the infrastructure and the growth and the education and the protection of Social Security and Medicare that we could have had, the balanced budget that we could have had. So I find it annoying and actually counterproductive to our economy that we have caved to the Republicans so that we can run the country. That's a tragedy, and it's one which we have to revisit. And even the Republicans now are finally saying, gee, we're running out of money, because suddenly they realize that the Congress, they have to govern, and they're going to be held responsible for it. So when there's a debt, they realize that it's a debt that they're helping to create, and they finally are admitting. It was the head of the Government Operations Committee who came out and said that, yes, you have to count the tax cuts that are taking money from the Treasury as real dollars lost. Finally, but it took until this new Congress, when they realized that they are going to get blamed, to go there.
What is it going to take to get us going in the right direction and settle this deficit conundrum once and for all?
Well, it's games. It's debt ceiling games, and the Republicans are using it as a wedge, and it's never been done before. You know, the 27th Amendment and the 14th Amendment both say that you can't do what the Republicans are doing. The President of the United States shall pay the debts of the United States. That's actually what the Constitution says, that the debt of the United States shall not be questioned, and the President would be derelict in his duties if he didn't pay it. And you can't do the other game they're trying to do, which is to tie it to congressional salaries. You're not allowed to tweak congressional salaries after the start of a congressional session. You're not allowed. It's in the Constitution. You can't do it. So they have done some unconstitutional things. So I interviewed John Conyers, the ranking Democrat on Judiciary, Jim Clyburn, and Newt Gingrich even said that the debt ceiling is a loser, and that we'll never wind up doing it, and that the Republicans are crazy to play the game because they'll only get blamed for it. It is tragic that we are holding the full faith and credit of the United States hostage to what the Republicans are trying to do, which is to make huge cuts in Medicare and Medicaid and to privatize it so that Granny will be on her own at the risk of the Wall Street big money people.
Of course, we are sitting here today at Radio Row at Families USA's Health Action 2013 conference. The Affordable Care Act remains a hot topic, something that you and I have talked about at length over the years. What's the latest?
Well, there are compromises there, too, that shouldn't be made, Jason. The president and Sebelius recently just caved on long-term care. They gave away the long-term care provision of the Affordable Care Act. And the senior groups are rightfully livid. There are 35 million seniors, and every one of them, including me, is worried that someday you might be thrown in a nursing home and lose all your money. And I used to say when I was chief of staff of the House Aging Committee that I'm going to be old someday, so I have a conflict of interest. Now I'm old. And so, you know, I'm right in that group. And I had to make the decision as to whether to take Medicare Part B or let my own health insurance, which is Kaiser, which I analyzed it, and it meant that I'd have to pay maybe $1,000 or $2,000 if I got to the provisions, but I'm better off not taking Medicare Part B. But that's a decision that everybody has to make. But what I didn't do was buy the enormously expensive long-term care insurance, which covers you if, by God help you, you're dead meat with cancer, or you get into Alzheimer's and you're dying, you're in a hospice, you're in a nursing home. Those are the provisions that are so enormously expensive, that you'd have to pay, and they would deplete your entire family income. I made the calculation that I've got a 401k, I've got a house, I've got this, I've got that. So for the $40,000 or $50,000 a year, hopefully I wouldn't live that long in such a depleted state, you know, and my wife wouldn't therefore be made bereft as a result of what happens. I made that calculation. I'm not sure it's the right one. And so the administration, because they said this would be too expensive, actually caved. And most Americans don't know about that. So I think that one of the things we can accomplish here on the show, and it's very important, and maybe all through Radio Row, is we did it before when we made them go to a 50 instead of a 60 vote. We made them go to the reconciliation process by the power of Radio Row. Now we need to restore long-term care to national health insurance. That's one of the huge things that just got lost.
One of the things that also comes up when talking about the Affordable Care Act is this new emphasis on prevention. Talk to me about your thoughts on that.
Well, I think it's great. I think what Obama did actually is historic. Now let me get into my strategist and supporter mode where I'm a surrogate and I'm on, you know, and ran the press room at the convention. I'm wearing my Roosevelt tie, and since our listeners can't see it, to remind me that what Obama did really is Rooseveltian. With what he did with health care, it was revolutionary, the first time that any president has succeeded in getting national health insurance. And so he got it with prevention covered, and he got it with lifetime benefits, no pre-existing conditions. The donut hole for seniors, the $2,500 to $4,500 gap when you pay between those two for your drugs, now those are going to be covered. Kids on your plan until they're 26. Enormous, important provisions, and that they include colonoscopies and mammograms for prevention, those kinds of things which can keep you healthy and not cost hundreds of thousands of dollars when you get later terrible illnesses if you hadn't had the preventive screening to stop them. So this bill is great. You know, and the Republicans are still at it. They're still trying to claim that this is horrible. And the polls haven't changed, and I don't know why. You know that Jon Stewart made a thing of when I was on Fox, and he made a joke out of it when I said that, you know, the bill has all these provisions I just ticked off, the lifetime benefits and the no pre-existing conditions, kids and the donut hole, and the insurance companies have to spend 80% of benefits for people, not for their own salaries. Those kinds of things in the bill, and Fox tried to cut me off and wouldn't let me finished the provisions, and Jon Stewart said, "Wiener, what part of we don't want our viewers to know what's in the bill, don't you understand?" And so he made a joke out of that. That's still the case. The Republicans want to claim it's this big socialistic thing. No, it's health care for 30 million Americans that didn't have it, and for 180 million Americans, better health care than what they had, and more thorough provisions. It is a hugely important bill that the Republicans want to tweak, and they're going to do it, Jason, by block grant reductions. They're going to try to block grant Medicaid and cut it down. Medicaid, now that it's expanded to cover 30 million new people, they're going to try to cut it back. They've already cut back the long-term care provisions. They're going to try to take away some of the provisions and to do screening and give it, they're going to try to give it back to the insurance companies instead of the panels of doctors, which is where it should be. They call them death panels. Now the death panels are the insurance companies. They can stop you. I'd rather have doctors telling me what I should and should not have. Those are the kind of panels that should be making the assessments on care that President Obama put in. So we have to be very careful to watch with a microscope what the Republicans try to do to whittle back this health care bill. And it's going to be up to the states to make sure they have the strongest provisions also. That's another key point, is that the states have the decisions of provisions to put in, and they have to make sure, you have to lobby in your states to make sure the strongest possible provisions stay in the Obama health care plan.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Bob Wiener, former Clinton White House spokesman. Bob, I wanted to get your thoughts on a key situation within the federal government, and that is the looming threat of sequestration. We're hearing some reports out of DOD that would say possibly mandatory furloughs of unpaid leave one day a week for civilian federal employees who are already under a two-year pay freeze. I'm wondering your thoughts as someone who has dedicated his life to public service, spent a number of years serving the country. What message does that send to you?
Well, it would be a horrible message if it ever came to be true. I was in two shutdowns when I was in the federal government, and you went home and you didn't know if you'd get your salary back, and then they always come back and say retroactively you get it, by the way. I mean, it's always the threat. It's an empty threat. They come back, they give it to you, But we didn't know that. And I was kept home because I guess I wasn't essential enough being the spokesman for the White House drug office, you know. But so it's a horrible experience. It's a horrible experience for federal employees who know the dedication that they give, and the myth that they are paid more than the private sector is nonsense. You take enormous cuts when you work in the federal government compared to what you could make in the private sector. And I know you just, that's what the revolving door is so critical. People are critical of it. But let me just say that this is a thing that it doesn't really ever quite happen the way that the threats are. I mean, are we getting tired of crying wolf on this one? I'm bringing Chris Van Hollen, who's the ranking Democrat on the House Budget Committee, and Tom Price, who's the vice chair of the for the Republicans of the Budget Committee, to debate this very issue at the National Press Club at 10 a.m. on February 12th as what we call a newsmaker, because I'm on the Newsmakers Committee. And that's where I play my bipartisan fair self and make sure that both sides can be heard and all. But I don't have to do that on this show. So, I mean, it is outrageous that the games are played that allow the Republicans to use the sequestration and the fiscal cliff as a threat. I mean, whose side are they on, the United States or the party? They're apparently on their own party. By the way, it backfired. People didn't like it. And the blame is against the people that threatened the fiscal cliff and sequestration. Now, sequestration, is it really the worst possible thing compared to what the Republicans want to do to cut Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and education, science? My wife is a cancer researcher, which has in the last two decades improved breast cancer mortality by over a third. You know, is it the worst possible thing? It is for the federal employees who'd be cut. But I'll tell you what, the military, maybe it's the only way that we can stop what Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex from continuing to dominate and be the death blow of our budget in the United States, with having been $1 trillion a year of real money for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And they just want to find another place now, whether it's Korea or North Africa with the new terrorist threats. Those are real places. But to have full-fledged wars instead of an intel strike the way that we did to get bin Laden, you know, the military wants to have enormous footprints and lots more contracting toys. Those are monies that are depleting our budget. We spend more than, I've heard numbers of 10 to 13 countries, the next 10 to 13 combined. The president said 10, now people are saying that the next 13 countries combined. That is crazy. It's crazy when we should be spending the money on infrastructure and streets and bridges and education and roads, schools, when we should be on in healthcare in the United States. So those are the real problems, Jason. And may sequestration and the fiscal cliff never come, I think it's an empty threat.
Bob Wiener, the former Clinton White House spokesman. Bob, always great to have you on the program. Thanks for taking the time today.
Thanks, Jason. Great to be with you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue from the Families USA Health Action 2013 Conference with Newsweek and the Daily Beast contributor, Eleanor Clift.
Attention AFGE members. Are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit that allows you to buy brand name electronics, furniture, and more through easy payroll allotment. With no upfront cash or credit check required and 12 months to pay, Purchasing Power gives you a better way to buy. AFGE members receive an 8% discount over what other federal employees pay. Learn more at afge.org/purchasingpower.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Eleanor Clift, a contributing editor for The Daily Beast and Newsweek. Eleanor, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be with you.
It seems like once a year we have the privilege of talking to you. Of course, this year we're back at Families USA's Health Action Conference. Talk to me a little bit about what you've seen so far.
Well, here at the Health Action Conference, I think there's great relief that the Affordable Care Act that the president signed into law is going to continue. I think last year the election was very much in contention. The constitutionality of the law was undecided, and Republicans were running on wanting to repeal it. And so I think last year it was a kind of a holding action. Not much of the plan had been implemented. It was its future was uncertain. I think now there's a lot of nervousness about whether enough states are going to be on board, whether the implementation can continue apace so that everything is pretty much in place by the end of 2014. But it's kind of a full steam ahead here. I mean, I think there's an excitement that, you know, we're at the cusp of delivering on the promise of this legislation.
Eleanor, one of the things that you said was a concern whether the states would be on board. Explain for our listeners what you mean by that. Is that something where the Affordable Care Act needs to be sold to the states in hopes that they implement it, or is it something beyond that?
Well, I think it's some 20 states have said that they will not organize the health exchanges that are part of the law. And while on the face of it, that sounds as though they're just opting out of the plan, there's a provision in the legislation that if the states opt out, the federal government comes in and sets up the exchanges. I know in Florida, for example, the Republican governor there has declined participation, and I've heard some, you know, representatives in the legislature say fine, because they wouldn't trust him anyway, and let the federal government come in. And the irony is that if the some of these, it's Republican governors in Republican states basically who are opting out, they're opting out because they don't like it because it's big government. So what are they doing? They're removing their participation and inviting in the government to do it for them. So they're going to end up, from their perspective, I think, with a situation that's worse than anything they could have anticipated. It's really rather bizarre.
What's the potential backlash there from the constituents?
Well, I think the backlash principally revolves around the increased participation in Medicaid. And the federal government is offering to foot the bill for expanding Medicaid for the first, I think, 5 years, and then a substantial portion after that. And you have some governors, particularly those with presidential ambitions like Bobby Jindal in Louisiana, turning down the federal money, which denies the people in his state access to Medicaid. But more importantly from a political standpoint, the hospitals who would stand to get these funds are going to soon be knocking on the governor's door and saying, you know, we can't service all of the people who are ill and need our services without this infusion of federal money. So there's going to be a backlash, I think, within states from providers, principally the big city hospitals.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Eleanor Clift, a contributing editor for the Daily Beast and Newsweek. Eleanor, you've been covering issues in this town for a long time, from the White House to Capitol Hill. How has this conversation around health care changed during your career?
Wow. I came here covering Jimmy Carter in 1976. He introduced a health care plan, which, from the Democratic perspective on Capitol Hill, didn't go far enough. And Senator Kennedy basically launched a presidential challenge against President Carter based on these dueling health care plans. Nothing went through, of course. And then, of course, Bill Clinton in the White House put his wife in charge of crafting a health care bill. Hillary Clinton spent much of a year consulting with professionals and crafting a bill that I think was over 1,000 pages, presented it to Capitol Hill, and Senator Moynihan, who chaired the Finance Committee, held it aloft and let it drop to the ground with a big thud to show what he thought of it. Hillary Clinton never even got a vote. She never even got that bill out of committee. And the collapse of Hillary Care in 94 helped lead to the takeover of the Congress by the Republicans in 94. And after that, health care was moribund until President Obama took it on. And it was a tough road for him. And it helped launch the Tea Party, which opposed the health care bill. And so the politics around it really inflamed the Republican side. But we have the bill, and this president can claim to be the first president to accomplish this goal. Going back to Teddy Roosevelt was the first who tried. That was the early 1900s. It's been a long road getting here.
Presidents often are linked to a few things, many times one or two things, that they accomplished or didn't accomplish in office. Do you think that President Obama will be linked to the Affordable Care Act almost instantaneously at the end of his term?
Oh, absolutely. And he's even embraced the term Obamacare, which started out as an epithet. And it is, I think, his signature accomplishment.
One of the things that we see in the press is the contentious atmosphere on Capitol Hill. In your time in this town covering these sorts of things, have you ever seen it like this before, or is this just the way that it goes?
I think it is more intense, certainly, than I've witnessed in my time in Washington. It used to be people were on opposite sides, and they would exchange these rhetorical broadsides, and then they'd go in the back room and they'd come up with a compromise. I think the difference now is what you have a whole segment of one party, the Republicans, fearful constantly of a challenge from the right. And so the Republican Party gets driven further and further to the right, so that it's not a general election they're afraid of. It's the threat from within, if you will. And I don't remember that as such a potent dynamic in any previous election cycle.
One of the things that we also hear is that Congress is broken. Would you agree with that, or do you think that it's simply serving the purpose that it was created to serve?
Well, Senator Kerry delivered a very moving speech, his final speech in the Senate, and he said it's not the rules that are a problem, it's how people interpret those rules. And the right to filibuster is one of those rules that has been abused. Senator Reid has faced 385 filibusters in his time as leader. Lyndon Johnson, a historic Senate leader, faced one filibuster, and that was over civil rights. So that gives you a sense. I mean, the Republicans filibuster even things they're for just to kind of stall the machinery and slow things down. And, you know, the president's nominees and judges, I mean, there really is no good reason to stall that the way they are. And this morning I heard Senator Lindsey Graham is saying that he will put a hold on the nomination of Senator Hagel as defense secretary if the Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, doesn't come and testify on Benghazi. Now, To me, it's almost like hostage taking or bribery. And I think these tactics have always existed, but they're much more blatant now and much more pervasive.
Getting back to the Affordable Care Act, where do we go from here? What's next?
Oh, I think next is putting in place these exchanges and then educating insurance companies and people how to navigate these. This is all going to be online. And the insurance companies are going to be competing, and people are going to have to weigh the different options. And the other thing that concerns me is the escalation of premiums here. You have critics say, oh, we told you Obamacare was going to cost more money. Well, Obamacare isn't even in place yet. This is Republicans have discovered that if you bump up the prices now, you can blame it on Obamacare. But Obamacare should bring down those premiums because there should be more competition. So let's see if that actually develops.
Eleanor Clift, contributing editor for The Daily Beast and Newsweek. Great to see you again. Thanks for coming by.
Same here. Thank you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue from the Families USA Health Action 2013 Conference with Families USA Executive Director Ron Pollack.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Attention AFGE members. Are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit that allows you to buy brand name electronics, furniture, and more through easy payroll allotment. With no upfront cash or credit check required and 12 months to pay, Purchasing Power gives you a better way to buy. AFGE members receive an 8% discount over what other federal employees pay. Learn more at afge.org/purchasingpower.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by our good friend Ron Pollack, the executive director of Families USA. Ron, welcome back to the program.
I'm delighted to see you. Thanks for being here.
We are here today at your conference, the Health Action 2013 in Washington. What is the focus this year?
Well, now that the Affordable Care Act is clearly moving forward, the Supreme Court has ruled that it's constitutional. President Obama won re-election. It's clear that the Affordable Care Act is going to move forward. So now the key task is to make sure it gets implemented effectively, that the tens of millions of people who don't have health coverage and really need it get the help that they need. They get enrolled in coverage. So it's job one is getting this implemented effectively and making sure that the various people who can get help know about it and then exercise this opportunity to get their coverage.
What are some of the key points that we need to be aware of that get implemented effectively?
Well, you know, one of the key jobs right now is to make sure that all the states, or at least as many states as possible actually opt into the Medicaid expansion. I'm glad that we already have four Republican governors in New Mexico and Arizona and Nevada and North Dakota who said that they're going to implement the Medicaid expansion. We hope that virtually every governor says this is a good thing to do. So that's very important. And now we got to do public education. You know, the vast majority of people who can benefit from this still are unaware of it. And so we've got a Herculean job ahead of us to make sure we reach people who, when they get enrolled, are going to get some really significant improvements in their lives.
Ron, you and I have talked about this issue and healthcare more broadly many times and at many of these conferences that you hold. So I think we understand, you know, some of the ins and outs of this issue. But I think you're right. And I think that there are still a lot of people that don't know much about the Affordable Care Act, that don't know that some of the provisions are already in place that they can take advantage of. And then there's much more to come about 11 months from now.
Well, that's right. And in fact, survey taken of people who don't have health coverage, and over three quarters of them didn't have even an inkling as to how the Affordable Care Act can help them. So we've got a big job ahead of us.
If you were to sit down with someone who knew nothing about it, what would you tell them the three most important things are they can benefit from?
Well, I think the first thing I would say is that there are going to be new marketplaces that are out there that will array a wide variety of health insurance plans. And those health insurance plans are going to have to provide information about what's in their plans in clear English. It'll be translated in Spanish for people whose primary language is different than English. And we can now compare apples to apples rather than have fine print that confuses a lot of people. And what's very important is anybody who signs up for a plan through these new marketplaces is likely to be eligible for subsidies to make that coverage more affordable. And the higher your income, the less you get. The lesser your income, the more you get. This extends for a family of four up to $92,000 in annual income, for a family of three up to $75,000 in annual income. So this reaches deeply into the middle class. So I'd say that's first thing. Help is on the way through these new marketplaces. Secondly, for the poor, I would say it's very important for them to understand that the Medicaid program is likely to be significantly expanded so that they can get coverage essentially for free, and it'll be good coverage. And so this is a very important component of extending coverage. And so people need to know which of these things they might be eligible for. I think the third thing I would say that sort of brings the two together is that there are different places where people can apply for help. And no matter where they go, we call it no wrong door. And any door they go to, they don't have to know necessarily that it's Medicaid where their application is going to go to or through the exchange. It will go to the right place, and whatever they're qualified for, that's what they will get.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Ron Pollack, the Executive Director of Families USA. Ron, going forward, what's the role of insurance companies in healthcare in this country?
Well, you know, a good part of the insurance industry was opposed to the Affordable Care Act. But I think most insurers know that the Affordable Care Act is now going to be implemented, and they can do well by doing good. And so we're hoping the insurers who may have different perspectives about different aspects of the Affordable Care Act work together with a whole host of diverse groups, hospitals, physician groups, community health centers, to make sure that people know about the coverage and that they actually participate in the public education campaign that needs to be undertaken. It's in their interest to do it, both as being good citizens and it's good for their business.
It sounds to me, after listening to all of this that you've explained, that we are on the cusp of a culture change of healthcare in this country.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think we're moving from a sense that healthcare coverage is a privilege and now it should be a right. That's a big change. And I herald that. And Now we just got to make sure as many people understand it and can exercise this right so that they get the help they need.
Let's talk for a minute about the impact of the Affordable Care Act on various groups of the population, senior, the disabled, low income.
So with respect to seniors, the Medicare program, of course, is going to continue in existence. But one of the things that seniors really would like to see change, they're eligible for prescription drug coverage, but there's a huge gap in coverage that's euphemistically called the donut hole. That donut hole is going to close, and that means that people are no longer going to be in a position where they're all of a sudden they've got coverage and then they reach a certain level of expenses for prescription medicines, and now they're in a no-coverage zone. That's going to change. I think that's very important. Seniors are going to get preventive care services for free. So I think those things are very important. Now, for young adults, that group tends to be the age group that is most likely to be uninsured. They're going to get disproportionate help. And the way they're going to get disproportionate help, I was saying before that there will be these subsidies that are provided, and they'll be provided on a sliding scale. Now, young adults tend to be in entry-level jobs, or they may not have a job right now. They are therefore going to get the biggest subsidies. And so this is going to be an incredible boon for young adults. People with health problems, with chronic health conditions and disabilities, one of the things that's going to be very important is come January 2014, nobody can be denied coverage due to a pre-existing health condition. That is a true game changer. And this already applies to children, but now it's going to apply to everyone starting January 2014. That's a really big deal.
I imagine that's going to have a large economic impact as well, that last piece about not being able to be denied because of a pre-existing condition, because as we've seen time and time again, people with personal bankruptcies oftentimes are spurred on by some sort of unexpected health crisis.
And you're so right in talking about personal bankruptcies in this context, because the leading cause for people declaring bankruptcy has something to do with their health care costs. And so now that people are going to get help, now that people are no longer going to be excluded due to a pre-existing condition, that's going to change.
As we move forward, inch closer day by day to 2014, what are you looking forward to the most?
Well, I'm looking forward to a really robust public education and outreach campaign so that right now more than three-quarters of the people in the country who don't have coverage actually learn about what's there. And by the way, in the process, they're going to be able to sort out fact from fiction about the Affordable Care Act. There have been so many political comments made about it. Now it's time to put away politics, and let's make sure that people understand how it's going to help them and their families. So that's our task at hand.
Ron, as we close out here, what are your final thoughts today?
Well, you know, one of the things about American politics is we say there's no such thing as final victories or final defeats. So we've won an enormously important victory with the passage of the Affordable Care Act. Now we've got to make it a reality. Now is where the rubber hits the road. And that's up to all of us. So we should stop patting ourselves on the back and now do some hard work to make sure that everyone knows about it and takes full advantage of it.
Ron Pollack, the Executive Director of Families USA. Ron, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for having us here today.
Well, thanks again for being here. It's a delight to see you.
Thank you to our guests this week, Common Cause President and CEO and former Congressman Bob Edgar, former Clinton White House spokesman Bob Wiener, Newsweek and The Daily Beast contributor Eleanor Clift, and Families USA Executive Director Ron Pollack. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org.